Good morning,
Hello.
everybody. This is Denise.
Hello.
Hi, good morning. The FNA is still running a little bit behind schedule, so I just wanted to join this meeting to let everybody know that it's still going on, so we may be a little behind schedule than expected.
Marissa, can you hear me?
Oh, this is
Can you
Denise.
hear me?
I can hear you.
I see
Yes.
you. I've opened my camera now. Thanks.
Yes, I can hear you and see you. Yeah,
Great.
the other meeting, it's running a little bit behind. They're still having conversations. Just wanted to join this one to let everybody know. Hang tight. How's everybody?
Good. Your hair is
Good.
down today. It's
I
pretty.
know.
Looks
Thank you.
good. I can't
I
say
cut
that,
it
but
a
yeah.
little bit.
I'm still recovering from a
Well, I'm
Washington
going.
State
Y'all
trip
got
with
me in my
the
yoga today
There
because
you
I was
go.
it's like I wasn't gonna get going, get it all makeup on, and then go to do that. So
There you go.
excuse my appearance.
We went to Seattle, saw the kids, and went to the Lake Chelan on the other side of the Cascades for 5 days. So we got home Tuesday, but I'm still on Pacific Diet, drinking a
I
lot
bet.
of coffee.
Yep.
Denise, do we have the next meeting date in September yet? Because Carol and I are going to be in Europe for part of the time.
We
Do we?
don't have it yet, but that's a good question. We could probably discuss that towards the end of the meeting just to see what are good dates, maybe towards the end of the month. But we can definitely have those discussions. I'm not sure if we can even push it to October and have just one meeting, but those are good questions for Brett for sure.
Okay, great. Thank you.
See our conference
Yeah,
room.
usually we don't know until a little bit closer to the time, it seems.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm out from the 12th through the 22nd, which is a huge amount, so I may have to
Oh.
miss it.
I mean, it's Europe, so you
Yeah,
have to you can't be there less than a week. Come on now. Exactly.
miss my fellow baseball fan, Toby. Haven't covered a meeting remotely in a long time. It's weird. Well, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Nice smart shirt, Toby.
I'm
Can't find my mute
on brand,
button.
right? I'm
Oh,
on
there it
brand.
is.
So, Jeff, I think we would still have that week of the 23rd, maybe 26th and 27th of September, or even the 30th.
Oh, that would be perfect. But don't worry about me. I just try. Yeah, I want to attend as many as I can. It's not right.
Yeah, especially because
It's
that
not
is
right.
the budget. That's budget meeting, so.
Okay, we'll see. I can fly from Amsterdam directly to Austin.
Oof.
See the baseball All-Star game is going to be in Arlington this year.
It's crazy here. I won't even go on that side of town anymore, hardly.
Become a big entertainment district, I guess, right?
Oh yeah, I mean between the concerts and the Cowboys and the Rangers and
Six Flags.
Six Flags. Six Flags doesn't it's not as bad. It's not bad down, it's a little bit different direction, but down Collins, it's Collins is where all that runs. And they've built another Lowe's hotel right there. There's two right together. And it's insane down there.
Used to be all prairie in the old days.
Yeah. But Grand Prairie.
All right. Good morning, everybody. I am Garrett Sprouse, chair of the board. Today is June 28th, 2024, and the time is 10:04 a.m. I now call to order this meeting of the Board of Directors of the Surplus Line Stamping Office of Texas. This meeting is being held in person at the Surplus Line Stamping Office of Texas, 1601 East Pflugerville Parkway, Suite 3301, Pflugerville, Texas, 78660. Some board members are attending today's meeting via video. Written notice of this meeting, proposed agenda, and all related meeting materials were provided to the Texas Department of Insurance, Deputy Commissioner of Financial Regulation Division, and her designees on June 12, 2024, in accordance with the Surplus Line Stamping Office of Texas Plan of Operation, Section 2C2. Written notice of this meeting and the related agenda were submitted to the Office of the Secretary of State on June 21st, 2024 for publication in the Texas Register in accordance with the Texas Open Meetings Act. All board members were notified of this meeting on June 12th, 2024. A conference call-in number was provided to members of the public in the public meeting notice. I will now call roll to confirm which board members are participating in today's meeting. Jason Cables.
Here.
Peter Harrison.
Here.
Jeff Klein, Vice Chair.
I'm here, present.
Mark Koch.
Present.
Dick Lawrence.
Here.
Leslie Liljenberg.
Present.
Secretary. Leslie Milvo.
Here.
And Ezekiel Nathal, who I believe is not able to make it today. A quorum of five or more members is present pursuant to Texas Government Code Section 551.125B2 and the Stamping Office Plan of Operations Section 2C6. The following Stamping Office management staff, council, consultants, and liaisons are present. Please affirm your attendance for the record when I call your name.
Right.
Brandon, Executive Director.
Present.
Donna Ogg, Director of Finance.
Present.
Denise Amasquita, Director of HR.
Present via Teams.
Yolanda Stone, Director of IT.
Present.
Diane Herrera, Director of Operations.
Present.
Stan Strickland, General Counsel.
Present.
Paul Rainey, TSLA Liaison.
Present.
Are there any additional Stamping Office staff members, liaisons, or consultants attending?
Marissa Gomez, SLTX. Admin.
Nathan Onks, SLTX.
Marissa Robinson, SLTX.
Toby Pick.
Chantel Jackson.
Ariel. Hey, guys.
Ariel Rosario, SLTX, policy analyst.
Just to make it easy, I'll go down the list. I see it on my screen. So we have Ariel Rosario via Teams with SLTX, Katherine Hall, SLTX via Teams, Christian Robinson, SLTX via Teams, Dalton Moore, SLTX via Teams, Christian Porter, SLTX via Teams, Nathan Onks, I'm sorry, Nathan, SLTX via Teams, Portia Jeffries, SLTX via Teams, Chantel Jackson, SLTX via Teams, Charmila Subedi, SLTX via Teams, Toby Pick, SLTX via Teams, and Yuba Dahal, SLTX via Teams.
Thanks so much. There are any representatives of the Texas Department of Insurance, the Texas Comptroller, or legislative offices attending in person or by telephone?
Yes, John Carter, Director of Company Licensing, representing Jamie Walker, Financial Regulation Division.
Barbara Lazard Hernandez, representing the General Counsel's Office at Texas Department of Insurance.
Right. Thank you. Before we get started, I have a few housekeeping item reminders. Antitrust activity or discussion are prohibited at all stamping office functions. This prohibition includes the exchange of information concerning individual company rates, coverages, market practices, claim settlement practices, expenses, or any other competitive aspects of an individual company's operation. We will not have a public comment section. Public and media attendees listening by telephone should mute their lines at all times. Representatives of state board agency or state agencies and members of the public are welcome to observe or record this board meeting, but please refrain from asking questions or interjecting comments during the board deliberations. The state agency personnel present may be asked questions about their agency's policies if those questions relate to an agenda item. Members, council, and staff should identify themselves by full name when speaking. Please mute your microphone or telephone when not speaking. All right, moving on to agenda item 2, discussion appropriate approval of March 22, 2024 meeting minutes. Everyone was provided a copy of the March 22, 2024 meeting minutes. Are there any corrections? Any further discussion? There being no further discussion, do we have a motion to approve the March 22, 2024 minutes?
So moved by Jeff Klein.
Thank you. A second?
Jason Cable's second.
Leslie Hilgenberg.
We had Leslie and Jason jumping in. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say no. The ayes have it, the motion passes. I will now open the floor to Mr. Nick Lawrence, member of the Finance and Audit Committee, joined by Ms. Donna Ogg and Director of Finance, and Greg Brandon, Executive Director, to present the Finance and Audit Committee report.
Thank you, Gary. The Finance and Audit Committee, consisting of myself and member Jason Cables, met earlier today. Donna Ogg presented the 2024 Finance Year-to-Date Review to also considered and voted on a detailed recommendation for board consideration and approval regarding the pension plan that the board approved at its March 21st, 2024 meeting. For both of those items now, starting with Donna's 2024 year-to-date financial review, followed by Greg presenting the pension plan review. Donna.
All right, thank you. Good morning. We are presenting May's financial results. And for May, stamping fees were over budget 8% or $57,500. And for the year, we were over budget 1% or $25,300. Investment income was over budget 63% or $65,000 for May. And over 39% or $150,000 for the year, which means we earned more on our investments than we had projected. Total operating expenses were under budget for May, almost $82,500 or 13%, and under $1.2 million or 27% for the year. Salaries and benefits were under budget 13% or $51,700 for the month, and 34% or just over $1 million year to date. Reasons for that under budget situation was we've been 5 employees short on what we had budgeted for the year, and also the annual pension plan funding, we had budgeted for that in January. So that's why we are under budget in that category. Professional services were under budget by 32% or $11,200 for May, and under budget 17% or almost $38,000 year to date. In IT, the underage is due to RSI not being engaged since we rolled to the new version of the database, and also with MIS ending earlier than expected. And in operations, 50% of our Lemon Light SOW, that's the company that's doing our training videos, was paid in January, and the budget reflects it being spread out through the year. Conference and education were under budget 27% or $2,000 for May, and 68% or $30,700 for the year due to timing of budgeted conferences. Travel and entertainment were under budget 81% or $7,800 for the month, and 42% or $13,000 for the year for the same reason as conference and education. Occupancy and operating expenses were under budget 4,200 or 9% for the month, and under 43,000 or 17% for the year. And the categories that contributed to that under budget situation were software, computer equipment, and printing. That was the same as when I presented last time. General and administrative expenses were under budget $2,100 or 1% for May, and under budget $17,300 or 2% for the year. Contingency expense, which was not used, resulted in $3,300 savings for the month and $22,000 for the year. So we had $410,400 income for May and $218,500 income for year to date through. We budgeted for an income of $123,300 for the month, and we'd budgeted to have a loss year to date of $962,300 through May. Change in investment value was an increase of approximately $81,900 for May and $201,000 decrease year to date. Any questions? Right. We'll go on to the unrestricted, undesignated funds. We went into this year, 24, with a fund balance of almost $32.7 million, which was just over $20 million over the maximum for the year, which you may recall is $12,537,946 for 2024. May's year-to-date net income of $208,500 resulted in a fund balance on May 31st of just shy of $33 million, which is $20,368,000 over our current max. Any questions on the fund balance?
It's where we're the only organization that brings in more money and comes in under budget, and it's a problem.
Yeah, it's a problem. That concludes my presentation.
Is there any discussion or questions for Donna regarding the 2024 finance year-to-date update? Donna, do you have a recommendation regarding the 2024 finance and year-to-date update? Thank you, Donna. Moving on to the next sub item is discussion and appropriate action on the pension plan review, and I'll turn it over to Greg.
Thank you, Garrett. So just to get everybody back on the same page, because it's been a couple of months since we talked about this, you may recall we included a pension cost of $750,000 in the 2024 budget. The pension proposal was reviewed in December and again in March and approved back in March. And then the board deferred the refinement and final proposal to the Finance and Audit Committee. And then we are now bringing it back to you. These decisions have been made by the Finance and Audit Committee and bring it back to you for a full board vote. Next slide, please. Okay, so just so everybody recalls the original proposal, for budgeting purposes, we created a plan with a couple of assumptions. One of them is that we're really trying to emphasize employee retention. Our historical attrition rate was substantial, and we are looking to incentivize career development and create industry subject matter expertise for this organization. There was also a supplemental goal to reward the current employees who have committed their careers to this organization. And you'll see on the next slide, we've got a few, five-ish, that have been here 10 years or more. And this contribution data really acknowledges that historically, our salaries were not very competitive, and that led to a limitation on the ability for the employee to participate in the 401k and contribute the maximum amount that they were capable of. And so some of this, particularly on these high-end tenure years, is so that those employees can be caught up to secure their full retirement. So you can see over on the right-hand side, the box, you can see the tenure, company tenure on the left, and the contribution rate associated with each of those tenures on the right. And it spans from $25,000 to $55,000. Next slide. And then there are some other considerations. So if you look on the left, You can see the chart there that has all current employees, 24 current employees, and their tenure with the company. And then you can see if you assume their retirement age is 65, you can see we've got two folks that would be 65 in the 0 to 5 year time frame. We have two more that will be 65 in the 6 to 10 year time frame, two more after that in 11-15, and then four more in the 16 to 20 years. And then the bulk or the majority of employees are way over there on the 21 plus year timeline for anticipated retirement. A couple of things to keep in mind: the tiers that were proposed, they're limited to an accrual rule of 133% difference between each tier. And so mathematically, if you really kind of have to reverse the concept and say, if we want to catch up the people on the lower end, so you can see 21 through 24 that have been here for the bulk of their career, if we want them to catch up, those numbers are set at a number that catches them up. But what that does mathematically is it raises the numbers for the other tiers as well. And so that is a limitation of mathematical limitation of the system that we put together. Vesting period. If you recall, during the discussions back in December and March, we talked about having a vesting period as long as 5 years. But that is restricted by IRS statute to no longer than 3 years. So this proposal is recommending a 3 year vesting period, and that is based on company tenure or date of hire, not on the date of plan inception. So as you can see there, so basically everybody from number 8 on down would be vested in this program from the date that is initiated. The actuarial assessment is annual and provides a required minimum contribution and a maximum range up to 150% of the minimum requirement. We can pre-fund. You can see the number 4 bullet point there, pre-fund, which means pay up to 150%. And what that will do is that gives future us the ability, some flexibility in managing this program. So the board and our successors in the future will have some flexibility because it can create a funding holiday in the future if our financiers required that we were unable to fund fully for that particular year. And then something, this is relatively new, 2023 can be funded, but only before we submit our Form 990. So this is a nice benefit to the employees to be able to fund an entire additional year for the organization. But in order to get that completed, we do need a decision to be made today, basically, on that. And so from there, we went through all of this with the Finance and Audit Committee, and they have a recommendation. I don't know if, Stan, you want me to go through it, or would you prefer Nikki?
I think, yeah, if you'll just run through what we did.
So what we did was we went through, we had much more discussion on all of this. And what we agreed, what the Finance and Audit Committee agreed, and what they are bringing to you for recommendation of approval, is to approve the tiering system. Could you go back to that slide, please, Marissa? Approve the tiering system as presented. So you can see the less than 5 to 9, 10 to 14 contributions from $25,000 up to $55,000. So approve the tiering system as proposed. Approve a 3 year vesting based on company tenure or date of hire. To fully fund at 100% the 2023 year. To fully fund at 150% the 2024 year. And then finally, to defer review or engagement with NOVA and review the nuances of the plan to the chairman of the board and the executive director for completion and finalization of the contract for this pension.
And this is Garrett. Just a couple things that also came out of that discussion with the Finance and Audit Committee. Reminder that while tenure is calculated for all existing employees, it's only funded for 23-24. So somebody who's been with the organization for over 20 years, they would not get their funding back for as though they had been on this pension plan for 20 years. So it only would be that. So the high end, if they've been here for over 20 years, they'd get that high end amount for 23 and 24 would be funded currently.
Their tenure determines their tier contribution tier.
But it is not backdated to the day that they started with the company.
This is Jeff Klein. I had a statistical question, Greg, or Mr. Chair. Listening to Donna's presentation, something occurred to me. You built in a projection of somewhat over $700,000 for this included in the budget. It might be impossible to project, but what would that number look like if you fill all the current vacancies? Is it appreciably different?
If we fill what, Jeff? I'm sorry.
If you fill the vacancies you currently have in staff?
So we have three that are hiring. So basically, you could add $75,000. So it would be a 10% increase.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not, it's not material, in my opinion. Thank you.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And this is Gary again. One other reminder, when we approved this plan in principle back in March, we also included a mechanism for annual review. So if we find that it's, needs to be changed to accomplish the employee retention goals in any way, then the board will have that ability year over year to review and modify this plan as needed.
Got it. Thank you so much.
Is there, are there any questions or discussion or anything at this point?
This Bart via Teams. The $750,000 that was in the budget, is that for 1 year or 2 years?
That's 1 year.
So how can we fund 2 years if we have 1 year in the budget?
Well, we would go over budget on that particular line.
You got the authority to do that after you submit the budget to TDI?
Yes, TDI is here. So we have two representatives from TDI attending the
meeting. So we can just amend the budget however we want to.
So this is my opinion. I don't know that we need to amend the budget. We would just be over budget on that line item.
Okay.
I don't think it requires an amendment so much as just an acknowledgement that we had the opportunity to spend to fund an entire year. And so if we were questioned on that particular line item, we would just simply say we took the opportunity to add that benefit to the organizational pension program.
Currently, we're under budget in salaries over $1 million. And as a whole on our expenses, we're under budget $1.2 million. So
you're effectively washing out. So we won't be. So that's a good question, Bart, but I don't think there's no confirmation on budgeting for something like that. We're frankly, I think from TDI's perspective, the more important principle is to get the reserve balance reduced. And adding a year will reduce the fund balance. And I think on the grand scheme of things, being over budget versus actually reducing that reserve balance fund, I think that's the greater of two issues.
And if I may, this is Stan Strickland. The budget, as you just heard, it is approved by TDI on an annual basis. It runs through that review process. And what we've just heard from Donna is that because we're under budget on some other items, the budget as a whole can easily afford to fund the years that we're talking about here, the 2024 and 2023. I think as we go forward, the briefings that this board receives from Donna, as well as the briefings to the TDI staff and all, that will keep TDI and everyone apprised of how that ultimately washes out in the budget. And you can look at it and study it on a quarterly basis as we go forward for the near term.
Are there any other questions or further discussion for Greg on this item?
No, I was just like, I thought that was a good question, Bart, because we've been questioned on this situation so much that I think that, I mean, that could come. I think that more of the concern is it comes up that we've got this overage and then we're going back and funding that 2023. So, I mean, if y'all are comfortable with that it wouldn't be questioned, then I think it's a great way to utilize the money.
Yeah, honestly, I don't have any concerns that TDI is going to react negatively to the idea.
Perfect. Sounds good.
And this is Danny, and just I might add as a maybe another level of comfort in the quarterly meetings that Greg and Garrett and I have with TDI, the concept and the overall plan has been thoroughly discussed in those quarterly meetings with TDI. So it's not a surprise at all that this plan is on the agenda, and we're looking to fund it in a way that achieves the longevity incentives as well as any other funding and accounting goals that we have.
Greg, do you have a recommendation for the board?
It's really the Finance and Audit Committee's recommendation, correct?
It is, but you're
okay.
The recommendation basically that you've laid out, I guess, let's run through it again so we make sure we've got it, and that will be the recommendation of this board.
So the recommendation is the board approve the tier system as presented on this page. A 3-year vesting based on date of hire. 100% funding of 2023. 150% funding of 2024, and authorizing the chair of the board and the executive director to engage with NOVA and review the nuances of plan provisions and finalize the contract. Is there a motion to approve the Finance and Audit Committee's recommended details for the pension plan as defined by Greg, consistent with the presentation today?
So moved by Jeff Klein, Vice Chair.
Is there a second?
Second.
And any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed say no. The ayes have it and the motion passes. Thank you, Nick, Greg, and Donna. Moving on to agenda item 4, the executive director report and appropriate action. So, Greg, you are still up with the company update.
I'm up. Thank you. Okay. So, as always, I like to start with the organizational chart. You can see we have 24 employees and no changes to the organizational structure. 4 pillars create the foundation of the company, with operations and IT being the largest, and accounting and HR creating the remaining cornerstones. Proud to let you know that we have 3 more policy analysts starting in early July. Cheyenne will speak more to that on her slide deck, but I do feel it is important to note that the changes that we made to attract and retain talent are working. We have the strongest applicant pool in memory, and are very excited to see where we can go with this team in the future. What the board's done to allow us to compete for talent in the industry will pay dividends long into the future. As we approach mid-year, I want to take some time to reflect on what has occurred in the first half of the year and what we are looking forward to in the second half. You will see on the next couple of slides that we've had a very busy year from operational perspective. But on top of that, I want to remind everyone of a couple of other things that we have focused on during the first half of the year. Our highest priority going into this year was staffing. We set out this year with great intention to get our staffing right-sized for the workload, and our immediate focus was IT because we no longer had the assistance of third-party development to augment our own staff. Somehow, it feels like he's been a part of our staff for 10 years, but we actually only hired Jay Otterbein back in February. He's a perfect fit, and Sholanda's staff complement each other so well that we have actually decided to hold off on any additional hiring, as her team has adjusted very well to managing the workload which you will hear from Sholanda, was very substantial. I've already shared that we hired three more folks in operations next month, and from there, we are holding ourselves accountable to retaining and developing our staff. Getting the pension structure in place is the final piece of the puzzle, and will help us create long-range staffing, development, and succession planning for the organization. Another accomplishment worthy of recognition is strengthening our relationship with other stamping offices. Our leadership team had plenty of opportunity to meet with leadership of other stamping offices through conference participation throughout the year, but back in early February, we hosted a meeting with the leadership of the Florida Stamping Office. Stamping office organizations are one of the most unique aspects of the surplus lines insurance business, and operating them requires a unique set of skills. As we continue to establish best practices for our organization, we need professionals with comparable experience in this space to compare notes with. In addition to the meeting in February, several of our IT staff attended an insurance conference, InsurTech conference in April, and our IT staff met with Florida's IT staff and was able to interact with them directly. This networking creates wonderful opportunities for new perspectives, as both offices have bespoke filing systems that provide unique and critical IT infrastructure for the global surplus lines community. Sholanda is going to speak to you about the recent database migration, but I think it's important to remind everyone that while migrating the database in our production environment garnered a lot of attention due to requiring a shutdown of our filing system, her team successfully executed the migration of three different environments, alpha, test, and production. So they didn't just flawlessly execute the migration once, they did it three times, all in the first half of the year. That really speaks to the strength and dedication of our staff. More recently, I provided testimony to the House of Representatives Committee on Insurance. There are some issues happening in other states that have created concern around homeowners' insurance costs. The committee proactively met to hear from various parties representing TDI, the Stamping Office, and a few others who provided a broad perspective into the state of the insurance market in Texas. My goal was to communicate that the large majority of premium in this market is commercial lines, and rate and form freedom allow buyers to purchase bespoke policies that are specifically designed to transfer their unique commercial risks. Looking forward into the second half of the year, we are excited to welcome our new employees to the operations group, continue working with TDI to revamp our plan of operation, work with the board to revamp our employee handbook, and we will continue adjusting our role in the E&S Society to meet the needs of all interested parties, buyers who pay our fee, the agents and brokers who work hard to file the policy information, and for the regulators and legislators who depend on the data we collect to make information decisions for the overall insurance market. All of that creates an improved sense of pride in our organization and ourselves. And that pride really speaks to resilience, not hubris. We are creating resilience in this organization. We're proud of the services we provide of this state, proud to work here and with each other. Next slide for me, Marissa. So moving on to the data slides, the first slide is the year-to-date premium through May. Please note that since this meeting happened in June, we can only give you year-to-date through May, so not quite half a year peak into the industry. The blue line is the year-to-date data. The bar chart is the monthly data, January through December, with 2023 depicted in the colored bars from left to right. Total premium through May is $6.45 billion, and except for March, each month has set a new record for that month. This might be hard to see on the chart, but April set a new all-time record for premium of about $1.58 billion, and then that record was broken last month with $1.69 billion. We'll see what happens in the second half of the year, as many of the large brokerage houses are reporting that they are seeing premiums flatten out a bit compared to recent history. I rarely make predictions, but I do concede that premium growth has been the story for as long as I have worked here, and that story has continued into 2024 as well. This next slide is specific to item counts, and before we start, worth noting that the y-axis does not start at zero on this slide. But it does have the same graphical arrangement. The blue line is the 2024 year-to-date, and the bars are monthly data from 2020 through 2023. As you can see, the total year-to-date item count is just north of 526,000, and every month this year has set a new record for that month. May also set the all-time record for a month with 119,802 items. It's not reflected on the chart, but May was also the second highest policy count we've ever experienced in a month with 76,289. So for us as an organization, the story isn't just that premium is going up, it's that item count is going up too. As you can see from the yellow bars starting in roughly April of last year, our filing count climbed well outside the historical norm. And continued that trend in this year. Excuse me. This completes my update, and I've already taken too much of Cheyenne and Sholanda's narratives. So unless there are any questions, I will hand it back over to Gary.
Is there any further discussion or any questions on the Stamping and Wellness update? Greg, do you have a recommendation for the board at this time?
I do not.
All right. Thank you, Greg. Moving on to the next agenda item, which is the Operations Director Report and Appropriate Action, Operations Update, and Smart Update. And at this time, it will be Cheyenne Herrera, Director of Operations.
Good morning, everyone. So I just want to, as I start everything, give a quick update on the existing team, and then I'll get into the status of the new hire. So, like I say this every time we meet, but super important to recognize that our team performance still remains outstanding, right? We are continuing to grow our knowledge base, use a hands-on approach, and we all know, because at least I've said it many times, right, this does not happen overnight. Greg mentioned it earlier, this put in the time and the effort to be in the industry, and that is what we focus on each time and each day. Everyone on the existing team continues to work on their individual and professional development goals throughout the year. And of course, I'd love to tell you that their calculated accuracy remains excellent, and the majority of the team is still achieving well over our required 97% minimum accuracy. So that is fantastic. Some of them are even getting 100% in some of the months, which is amazing because we are all still human. So that just never ceases to amaze me. So thanks to everybody. We have, speaking of professional development, Portia, who is on this call, PA2, and Nathan, also on this call, Senior Policy Analyst. They both attended the WSIA's Advanced ENS School earlier in the month, and they said they really learned a lot and appreciated just hearing the in-depth examples and topics that are explored. It was over roughly two and a half days. So not necessarily specifics on how to perform this job, but really get that exposure and networking in the industry and just hear different aspects and learn and hear different stories and experiences. We have been working, and I think I've mentioned this a couple of times, working on updating our operations training manual, and those updates are, I would love to tell you, complete. The training team continues to identify improvements to the existing materials. In preparation for filling those open positions, they have put in a substantial amount of work and effort. They've not only updated it, but they're trying to make it more clear and concise and interactive and engaging, right? There is nothing more boring in life than sitting and reading walls of text in a 200-page PDF document. We're losing people left and right. Yeah, so we're trying to make it more engaging, and they've really done a fantastic team and it's a fantastic team, a great job. They've just improved the concepts and tools and everything they've done. Kathy, who is one of our lead policy analysts, she's been spearheading this project. And I have to say, she's come up with and learned really how to make great PowerPoint engaging presentations. She had no experience in it. So she's learned that all on her own. I told her to be super careful because that's a slippery slope. She might be involved in making our presentations, though. But Kathy, along with Chantel, our other lead policy analysts, and Ariel and Tyler, who are both policy analysts too, they've been instrumental in this progress and improvements and the overall training concept. So I really appreciate all the work that they've done. I really hope that this growth comes to each training session, but this is far and away the biggest group of changes that we've made because we're just really trying to be super engaging. And like Greg says, we want to make sure that we are retaining them. We don't want to hire five to keep two. We want to hire three to keep three very long term. So we really try to focus on that in even preparing our materials. So, status update on those vacant positions. In early May, we posted multiple positions for a policy analyst one. We received a phenomenal response. Greg mentioned that a little bit, but the applicant pool was really one of the best and most precisely qualified pools that we may have ever seen. Certainly since I've ever had to look at resumes, but it was insane. We reviewed multiple resumes and we scheduled interviews for 10 highly talented and qualified applicants in early June. Yes. So also probably the biggest number of people that we've interviewed. Usually it goes, you get some applicants offered interviews. Some of them just don't even show up, right? So it's just a handful and you just have to make it work. This was a difficult decision, but it was a great difficult decision to have. We made offers to 3 candidates. So we've mentioned before that we had 4 openings. We made 3 offers. And conversations with Denise and Greg, we are awaiting the final background checks and obviously the official and final confirmations of those before we announce it, right? We just want to make sure all of those official HR boxes are checked and I's dotted and T's crossed before we announce those officially. I'm super excited about the opportunity because they're going to bring a wealth of different experience, backgrounds, and perspectives to the whole team and the organization, which is going to be amazing. I feel it. They're scheduled to start the next Monday, July 8th. So we are, fingers crossed on all the background checks, but we are remaining positive and super excited about what they're going to bring to the team. So before I get into the next bullet point there, I want to give just a super quick update on the reduced stamping fee rate. We've talked about, all of the premium continues to increase, but we did reduce the stamping fee. So we announced that in November 2023 that any business effective on or after January 1st of 2024 would have the lower stamping fee rate in an attempt to reduce. And the premium increases we're battling that. But if we look at that entire period of time, essentially beginning in November 2023, we could receive policies that were effective January 1st of 2024. So if we look at that entire period through the end of May, nothing for June yet. 43% of the transactions had the new rate, and 57% of the premium. So that's a small amount, but if we just consider May, so the single month of May, 73% of the transactions had that new rate and 90% of the premium. So just as we've mentioned every time, I know Christian, when we do the stamping fee analysis each time, that's not something that takes place immediately. We typically looking at historical norms and we say that it takes about 6 to 9 months to fully realize that, right? So if we think it's May, we're roughly 90% of the premium. So I feel like we're right on target-ish with those historical norms at 6 to 9 months of really fully realizing that. So just a quick update. That is doing what it's supposed to, battling the premium increases. And that we cannot control. So into my next couple of bullet points, I really wanted to talk about something different. Every time that we meet, I talk about SMART because it really relates to that vendor relationship that we no longer are in and all of those expenses. But I wanted to talk a little bit more about what operations does, right? We are responsible for SMART. We continue to support. We have roughly 1,800 to 2,000 live users that we support and 1 to 200 test users. Those are all external users. Primarily, we do that through calls. We roughly have 350 calls a month, so not a lot, right? Not a ton. We, knock on wood, we could be worse. So 350 roughly calls a month and on average 1,900 emails a month. So that is more of the bulk of our time. Everybody likes to have things in writing, so we can go back and reflect on it and consider it later. Right, we have all of that. That is really our day-to-day work and operations, but we are statutorily required and responsible for a lot of other things, and those kind of are the undercurrent of everything else that we do, but I want to make sure that we're highlighting and talking about those as well. The biggest one, because we just wrapped it up, and John feels this as well, right, is the generation, publication, or delivery and support of the monthly and annual late filing report. That's an administrative code requirement. 15.11. All right, we work to educate the stakeholders on the requirements. They have basic questions and we assist them with the dispute resolution requirements that are defined in the code. All right, after the generation and delivery of the annual late filing report, which if we remember was in March of this year for 2023, the ops manager, Toby Pick, and I, we review any dispute and subsequent referral of those disputes to TDI. right? We're really giving them our priority focus. We're making sure that stakeholder understands stamping office limitations, and we provide the stakeholder and TDI with all of the detailed information that, that relates to their dispute or factors. So we can refer that to TDI so they can have further details about that as they're going, as they may need to evaluate that case with the details. And really, what it comes down to is each round that we have of any type of findings or analysis, whether it's from the annual or monthly, we are really considering and updating the report logic, right? We're applying, here's this additional weird data scenario, or oh my gosh, this, nobody would have thought this could happen, but here it is, right? We continue to make process improvements. We're not monthly making changes to the report, but annually we reevaluate all of the feedback that we've received and employ those into the reports, or I should say, make system enhancements. So for example, we might, we'll be employing different methods to notify the user, right? We give them a notification in an email and a certified mail, but we want to make it even more obvious that they have some requirements and timelines that are defined in the code. So we want just to make them more obvious. So we're really just taking in all of those factors and make an evergreen and growing system report and application. We also have the, we call the TWIA report. Most of you are familiar with TWIA, Texas Windstorm Insurance Association. We are scheduled to generate, confirm that data, and notify TWIA's actuaries of its availability in July, so and starting next week. As a reminder, this is generated annually by the stamping office and reflects property premium written by the insurer for the previous year, categorized by coverage type and where the risk location is, whether it's on the seacoast or the remainder of state, which would allow calculation of any necessary assessments on any admitted affiliates of those surplus lines carriers. So something that our data analysts handle and deliver that each year. Say we make it available to TWIA in July. That doesn't mean that they access it in July, but it's our standard deliverable. One of the biggest and one of the more important things that we do is insurer analysis, right? That our ultimate goal, and these are my words, right? This is not from the code, right? My words is to protect the consumer, the insured, right? That is our one of our biggest things as a stamping office. But also this insurer analysis provides additional and detailed information to the surplus lines agents, right? Because they have the requirement to place the business with an eligible surplus lines insurer. So we, as the stamping office, are required to provide also evidence to TDI that insurers meet those eligibility requirements and to provide an evaluation of each insurance contract and surplus line insurer. So to do this, we analyze, and I'm going to read this because Christian and you have provided me this content. I don't do this work, but I oversee it, right? So we analyze the insurer's annual financial statements and NAIC defined benchmarks and other supporting documents to confirm each DSLI, that's a domestic surplus lines insurer, that means they are domiciled in Texas, or a foreign insurer, which is US based, that is wishing to enter the Texas market. We're making sure they're meeting qualifications that are outlined in the Administrative Code 981.072, as well as their ability to meet minimum capital and surplus in the future by analyzing their risk profile. So as a reminder, we've talked about US based and Texas based, but there are also alien or non-US based insurers, and those, any insurer reflected on the NAIC quarterly listing is automatically eligible to write business in Texas per the NRRA. And they have let me know that the NAIC has its own eligibility requirements, which do differ a little bit from Texas for non-US insurers, that because it has a $45 million minimum capital and surplus requirement. So each quarter, we also do financial summaries of all of the U.S. Domiciled or foreign insurers and create and publish those updated summaries to our public-facing website, just as that service to the agents so they can have that information. And we also perform continuing or ongoing evaluations and analysis of all insurers as their financials become available and or as time permits. So year to date, we've completed 5 new insurer recommendations. We have had 8 new insurers become eligible. So those are insurers or syndicates. And we've only had 1 syndicate year to date become ineligible. For perspective, in the past 5 years, we had an average of 22 new insurers or syndicates entering the market per year. For the previous, so the 5 years before that, that average was 10. So So we've had a lot more insurers coming into the market, which is good, right? That there's a lot of theories that I will not go into my opinions on that. So we also are responsible for data requests. We average 14 per month, and that's year to date. So just looked at 2024. We receive these from both external and internal stakeholders. External, maybe from regulatory bodies like TDI or the comptroller, industry partners like TSLA or WSIA, or other stakeholders, insurers, brokers, agencies like that. There may be other ones in there as well. Internal requests are usually data or analysis for maybe confirmations of automation, data deliverables for presentations, or additional context on what we might appear to be a data trend. Something is looking like it's increased a lot, but it's, you know, it's 1 month is not a trend. So that helps us have a great idea about that. And those data requests also help us understand opportunities for enhancements or automation in Smart or from our processes as well, right? So if there is a lot of interest on specific information, those are things that we can automate and or deliver regularly instead of manually addressing those. Speaking of automation, we, and by we, that's not me, that is Christian Robinson, who is our senior data analyst, handle some automation as well. These are external to Smart features. So that's some, we've automated our monthly premium article. We've standardized email notifications. So that way a human being isn't copying and pasting the same thing. It is automatically going out notifications to them for things such as missing policy limits or maybe a questionable use of some data. Some of these will be absorbed into Smart. Some of them will remain external to Smart. So any questions or thoughts we want to discuss deeper, and at any time, any board member or stand, TSLA, PDI, at any time, if there are anything from operations perspective about what we do, would like to hear more about it, understand deeper, give me a call. We will set up some time to talk about those in depth if you ever interested.
On that front, I just like to thank you for being so open to having these discussions, because I know with stakeholders that you and your team have been very open to discussing ways to help get to compliance while being as the least disruptive possible to everyone's operations. So that's a huge help to the industry as a whole.
Yeah, we are here really to serve, right, as best we can and as much as we can within the box that we are established that we are in, as much as we can do from there. And then even outside of that box, right, we just try to provide as much information to the next group or organization that can handle that to set everyone up for success as best we can.
And this is Stan. I just want to attest to the resource that we have here in Cheyenne. The other day I called her and I said, okay, let's run through the statute. Let's run through the TAC and go step by step and tell me what y'all do, what this really means, translates to in your world. And you know, there's so much that goes into just one line in the administrative code. We were on the phone a long time, and Cheyenne did a wonderful job at just stepping me through line by line what really goes on behind the scenes to fulfill those duties that are laid out in the administrative code. So thank you.
Cheyenne, this is Jeff Klein. I got distracted for a minute. You mentioned that the NAIC has a $45 million eligibility requirement for capital and surplus. What was the Texas number again, just for my own edification?
Yeah, I was going to say 15 million.
15. Okay, thank you so much. Great presentation as always, of course.
We'll go on to my next slide. So this is the, where you would normally hear a lot. Let's just give you a super quick Smart recap, right? We continue to show you all of the things, features that we've released, but really what are we doing right now and really going forward? We're going to continue with what we call technical debt releases, right? We want to make for sure Smart is evergreen. I'm going to say that probably every time I talk to you all. We just will make continuous improvements. Smart is a living application that grows from a technology and a feature standpoint. We will not be getting stale. I don't ever want to do an entire full scale dump the entire old application and have to start fresh and new. If Shalonda tells me we absolutely have to do that, okay, but we want to make for sure, I think both of our goal is that we continue with updates and from a process and technical standpoint. All right, so we do have some things that we are continuing to work on. Our policy audit and check work modules remain in progress. but we are continuing to perform those duties. So even though they do not exist in a specific application, we are continuing to perform those duties as we are required to. I've listed some on this slide, some enhancements and process improvements that we are working on. I mentioned some about the late filing report, just really notifying in multiple additional improved ways, right? Taking feedback from stakeholders and saying, okay, wow, lots of people and brains, including, you know, we've had lots of focus groups when we were rolling out different aspects of SMART. And then somebody calls and says, hey, what about this? And it's the most amazing thing you've ever heard. So, right, we certainly are including those as well, right? But we, I'm not going to read those to you, but that is something that we are also doing, is just enhancements and process improvements to everything. And again, like I said, anytime that there's anything you want to discuss in depth or high level, reach out to me and I will set you up with one or a few team members so we can get into the details of that. So any questions on our really SMART status or anything from that perspective? Okay, well, this concludes my presentation.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion or any comments on this item? Ferrer, do you have a recommendation for the board at this time?
No.
Thank you, Cheyenne. Moving on to the next agenda item, which is ITS Director Report and Appropriate Action with Shalonda Stone, Director of ITS.
You can go to the next, yeah. So I'm going to start off by discussing some IT milestones that will be reoccurring on our slides as we go through probably for a good bit. One of the milestones we want to do is make SMART serverless. So just like Cheyenne said, we're not trying to redo anything or make anything stagnant. So the point of now is really going forward to make SMART more efficient, more better, more lean, easier to update, and less invasive when we have to do updates, because right now we're having to, you know, to have outages to do updates. So we're trying to make it as smooth as we can without being as disruptive. But going forward, that is literally one of our goals, basically making it serverless. They say serverless, not really serverless, just running on somebody else's stuff. We won't have to basically maintain our virtual machines, which is, we call them VMs. Right now we have VMs that run SMART, so we're constantly having to do Windows updates. If there's, you know, then those most of the time require reboots to finish up the updates. Depending on the type of the update, it could take an extensive amount of time to actually get the Windows update completed. So making it serverless, that limits a lot of those actions that we're having to take right now. The other one is a SMART backlog. There will always, probably always be some SMART backlog that will need to be worked on. So this will always be a milestone. The SOTX website refresh, that is something long-term that everybody is kind of hoping to get done. And that's just the SOTX.org, which is our facing website, not SMART. SMART enhancements, we'll continue to do those too. It'll be stuff that's always continued to be turned on besides the backlog that has to be completed. The SMART connector, that is the part that a lot of the agencies use on the outside that have what we're for. And they're using that to actually do seamless filing into SMART. So we currently have things that need to be corrected, things that need to be updated, enhancements on that. And then always process improvements. We're always aiming to make things better, more efficient, keeping up with what's going on. And a lot of times that is very hard to do because technology changes as soon as you blink. I've learned that, and it's still currently something that happens.
Yeah, that's it for that point.
This is our roadmap as I showed it our last board meeting. As we continue to go through this, we'll all continue to update the roadmap. You'll see things shifting off. You'll see new things shifting on as we are starting to tackle more things. The .NET framework upgrade, it is actually in this system. So the next meeting that will roll off. Creating Azure databases for the development team. This is something that I've talked about in the past, and it's very important. Right now, when the developers have to look at each other's work, it's taking more time because basically, if I have a database on my computer, and Greg needs to look at it. I have to download myself on my computer, give it to Greg if I have scenarios or testing scenarios that are set up on my computer, or Greg has to mimic what I have set up on his. So it takes additional time to do what we call PRs, which is peer reviews. And peer reviews are done before the before any of the developer's work is released to test or production. So we want to limit the time and make more make the testing more realistic when they're testing and when they're doing PRs. Another thing I want to highlight, and we're working to get rid of depreciated libraries and packages. That'll be something that we're going to continue to work on as time go on. As new things are released, it's a constant update. So this will probably move forward, move back, but this is something that'll probably always be on the roadmap. And then we started working with operations and with Cheyenne to actually change the way that we are scanning in and the way we're storing policies that are coming into the office. This is something that we just started. It just popped up on the roadmap, but it's something that we need to tackle sooner than later. Basically, right now, what we're trying to look at is a solution in Azure, which is a storage solution, and it's more of a permanent solution. SharePoint is permanent. However, SharePoint storage, to grow it, it's a little bit more extensive to actually add space to SharePoint versus having a storage solution in Azure would grow automatically when we need it to grow. So that's one thing we're looking at in TypeSafe language. I think they're kind of in the final stages of getting that done, but it's still some stuff that needs to finish up with that. Anybody have any questions? I won't get into all that. I just highlighted what was important. So IT updates, the staff updates. The staff is doing an amazing job. Our development team is truly amazing. And I know Greg talked about that, but I want to reiterate, they are excellent. I'm truly grateful for our developers, Dalton, Kenneth, Rain, and Jay, for all the work that they do. And also want to acknowledge Rodolfo. He does a lot of work in the background that if your computer's broke, then you know to call him. Other than that, he kind of sits in the background and does work that needs to be done also. I will say that most of the work that the IT does often goes unnoticed, but we truly do work in the background. It's not something that people see all the time. And I feel like if nobody knows we're here, that means we're doing what we should be doing correctly. So that means things are going seamlessly. If you have to call us, that means something's not quite right. Educational-wise, we have three of our developers, which are they're going to a conference in Kansas City right now. It's called KCDC. We have one of our team members that's going to a conference in August, and we have one scheduled to go to a conference in November. So we do stress education, and the only way we can do that a lot of times is really talking to other developers, understanding what's out there, what are we missing, what are somebody doing that we can do differently. So I'm really excited about that. The big thing on the table, Greg talked about a little bit earlier. As you heard in previous board meetings, I've talked about this and probably beat it over the head multiple times. But we had to upgrade our MariaDB. The original plan was to upgrade it to MariaDB in Azure, but Azure, AWS, and a couple other places actually ended the life of MariaDB. So we ended up going to MySQL. And the reason we chose MySQL was because it was more flexible, easier to upgrade to, and less intrusive to everybody else on the outside. We did do three transitions of this. Only one basically was noted for everybody. That gave me the biggest heartburn. But none of these were small challenges. And even, we tried to make it non-intrusive to the industry. And that was a big issue when we were doing a lot of the talks and figuring out where do we go from here. I will tell you that the team executed, especially the production one, with precision. It was an amazing transition. It did not keep anybody up at night, but maybe Cheyenne. But it was very smooth, and I do commend the team for that. But like I said, it was nerve-wracking. The project was projected to be out for 7 days. We were supposed to have a 7-day outage. It started on Friday, but it was completed in 4 days. It was very uneventful when stuff returned on Tuesday. It was like everybody else worked and everybody jumped on and nobody even noticed, which was great, which was fingers crossed. That was my thing. I'm like, don't turn it back on Monday. Let's turn it back on Tuesday, because if something happens, it's overnight and then it's all chaos. So we decided to turn it back on Tuesday morning. But to my note, I want to say, since I've been here, this was literally the smoothest transition besides transitioning over to Smart. This was very smooth. I do commend the operations team, because they were involved also in the testing and making sure that everything was seen and perfect before we turned everything back on. So kudos to everybody in operations that actually helped out with that. So. Let me think. So Greg previously touched on that due to the database upgrade, we do not have any engagement with RSI. MIS, EFS was decommissioned last year. MIS was decommissioned this year. And due to the decommissioning of MIS, we greatly reduced our virtual machine usage in Azure. Over the course of 3 years, we originally migrated 63 virtual machines to Azure, which is a ton of machines to have. But got to remember, we had all this on premises also. So we had a huge data center maintain this. We're down to 14 machines now. So we've literally are pretty lean in that standpoint. We become more efficient, and we're using other cloud resources as well as using Azure resources to maintain everything that we have. The dev team continues to tackle another technical debt, but we continue to tackle technical debt, and we'll continue to do it for a while. We went from .NET framework version 6 to 8. And just to explain the importance of this, basically .NET is the backbone of developing the desktop web applications, mobile applications that run on any operating system. So the need to keep this upgraded will continue to be a technical debt that we'll fight through probably yearly, or every couple years we'll tackle this debt. But that is in the final stages, and it's going to be released next week. It's going to be released to test first and then to production. But again, I just want to say I am so grateful that we decided to bring our dev team in-house. All these transitions that we're doing now, we wouldn't have been able to do it in the timely manner that we're doing if we would have never done that. That is all I have.
Any further discussion or questions on this item? Stone, do you have a recommendation for the board this time?
No, sir, I do not.
Thank you so much. All right, and now to everyone's favorite agenda item, adjournment. There being no other business before the board, is there a motion to adjourn?
This is Jeff, so move.
For a second.
Jason Cables, a second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed say no. The ayes have it. The meeting is adjourned at 11:12 on June 28th, 2024. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks. Home. Have a great weekend.
Did you get all that?
Yeah. Right. On the handout.
Yeah. It's all the handouts. For the meeting.
You got it, Greg.
Yeah.
I think we've met before.
All right.
Thanks. Mark's going to
You got to put Cheyenne's name in there next time.
You know what I saw there?
So much change, too.
On and off yesterday. And then finally it became
debate. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I had to go watch the debate.
There's
my popcorn.
Like, we got back, these guys.
So, yeah, that was a little distracting. So, yeah. Finally. Yeah. Got back to this. My eyes were kind of blurred. Yeah.
Not too bad.
Missed that one.
Not too bad.
Yeah, that was. But oh my God. Yeah. I don't know what the.
It was like a dream.
We've never seen it.
Yeah, you know, like the nuts.
I can see you just joining, leave and meeting. Yeah.
This is.